Hi, this is Ken McCarthy, and welcome to Ask Ken, a feature of the System Club for System Club members only, and for all our American members. Happy Thanksgiving. Do your best to really enjoy it and take some time off. I'm going to try, but I think I'll succeed. Wow, the new book is out. It's called How the Web Won, and I hope you've gotten a copy. I hope you will review it for me. That would be a huge help. What is this book about? Well, it's about the reality, never been told before, really, because I didn't have time to teach it, and apparently nobody else did until 2024, that the web was not an invention of the Pentagon, or the brainchild of Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, or brought to us by Amazon. None of those things. Yes, the underlying technology was funded by DARPA, the defense wing, the research wing of the Pentagon. That's true. But the network we have today and how it works, and most importantly, the content on it, that's all small players who did that. Individuals, small companies, small teams, and very literally, we the people. It's not like we all got together and had a big meeting and figured out how to do it, but using the phenomenon of the invisible hand, as discussed by Adam Smith in his famous book. A lot of people were trying to make something happen, and thanks to, I think it's Providence in this case, thanks to Providence, all these efforts congealed, flowed together, coordinated in an unplanned way. And we have the web we have today. So listen, guys, if you've ever sold anything on the internet, if you've ever bought anything on the internet, if you've ever learned anything on the internet, if you've ever planned a vacation on the internet, if you ever met a new friend on the internet, and I could go on, it all traces back to what a handful of people did between 1993 and 1995. And that's what's in the book. And there's also a lot of twists and turns with that convey some pretty good entrepreneurial lessons as well. I mean, you know, just, you know, not everything can be boiled down to how to. Sometimes you have to just see somebody do stuff. And most of the things, well, by definition, everything really related to what led to us getting the web involve people doing things that had never been done before, for which there were no instructions or manual or how-to or 10 easy steps. And the truth of the matter is, once you actually are in business, as you all know, you will be confronted with things for which sometimes there is no playbook, and you have to figure out the playbook. So in addition to telling this history that has never been told before, and is told in pretty good detail, you're going to have to be one hell of a professional professor, scholar, with a full-time scholarship, you know, scholar's job, and then you can have all these grad students working for free. It's going to take that to try to outdo this book, because this thing is detailed. And again, I know the literature pretty well because, number one, I lived the story, and number two, I've read pretty much every book, listened to every interview that's ever come out on the history of the web. And interestingly enough, not surprisingly, they're either so fragmented as to not be useful, or, and understandably so, they're presented from within a particular silo. So if you want to know how Netscape came from nowhere to, you know, change the world, you can get that book. And you can get that book about Amazon. You can get that book about eBay. You can get that book about Salesforce even. So that makes sense. People are telling their company stories. And obviously there are resources to tell the company story, which is why people have such a distorted view of how this web came to be. So this is the first book that I'm aware of. And I know literature pretty well, that provides the panoramic view of all the different elements that came together. And we really have something to be thankful for, because let me tell you what the alternative was. And I go into it in the book, but it's really important to understand this. Some folks may have played with the idea of alternative history, you know, the what ifs of the world. You know, for example, what if the Nazis won World War II? right? And we say, well, of course, that's ridiculous. It was preordained. Well, the Nazis were working on an atomic bomb, weren't they? That's a historic fact. We got there first. That's a historic fact. What if their bureaucracy was better than our bureaucracy and they developed it first? We wouldn't have had Hiroshima. We might have had Liverpool, the big port, bombed. We might have had Manchester, which is their equivalent of the old Detroit, right? When we used to make things here. What if that had happened? There wouldn't have been a D-Day. There wouldn't have been a liberation of Europe. So, and it really was just a matter of who got there first with it. And that's the situation that we faced in the early 1990s. Those of you that have been around a while know that pre-internet, there was a thing called CompuServe, AOL, Genie, Prodigy, and then thousands, literally thousands of small BBSs, computer bulletin board services. And here's how they worked. There'd be a computer set up somewhere. There'd be a bank of modems. You would dial a single computer with your modem at very slow speed. You would connect with that computer, and that would be your online experience. That computer would be connected to no other computers. This would be like if you had to dial up your modem specifically to get on one website and one website only, and you could not get to another website from that website. That's literally what it was like in 19, as late as 1993. Think about that, right? And you had to pay by the hour, right? There was none of this pay one monthly fee and get all you can eat. No. So you'd pay by the hour. And then if you, oh, the other thing is if you wanted to reach a, we'll call it a website, but we'll say a computer, but each computer was its own website. If you wanted to reach a different website, you had to disconnect from the one you were on and read and dial that one specifically. And it gets better or worse, depending on your perspective. If that computer was in another area code or in another country, this was the era of expensive long distance, you might be paying, $50 an hour to make a connection just to the phone company. Then you would pay for your minute by minute connection to the BBS. Okay, that's what we had in 1993. And old Bill Gates was looking at this business, salivating, and he was really interested in it. And they were working on something called Microsoft Network. Okay, you're following the picture so far. And luckily, sort of a side issue, AOL was really good at promotion, and they grew themselves in 93 from 1 million to 20 million. And they kind of messed up Bill Gates's plan. Now, what was Bill Gates's plan? Again, you have to know the history or you have to live through it. And it's easy to forget. I have to remind myself. In 1993, there was no internet. I mean, it existed. A few people were using it. You had to be a, working for the Pentagon or a defense contractor, or if you were an academic or a grad student, maybe if you were lucky, you'd have an account. That was it. I mean, it was literally up until 89, illegal to sell internet accounts to civilians. You couldn't go into the business of doing that. It was against the law, right? So this was the world. This was the world that we had. And the other, so every, now picture this, and for some of you, it'll be a memory exercise. For some of you, it will be revelation. Picture this. When you logged onto your computer, the only thing you could see was the stuff on your computer. All the things that you go to now, YouTube, a million, trillion, well, actually it is billions, billions of websites, all that information did not, you did not have access to. You only had access to what was on your hard drive, period. All right. So, and it gets worse or better, depending on your perspective. The man, the company who controlled what was on your desktop was Bill Gates and Microsoft. They had a 90% plus monopoly on the operating system. And that meant anybody that wanted to put anything on your computer had to get the cooperation of Microsoft. And I worked with a lot of people in the early 90s, and I met a lot of people. I was once in a room with three billionaires. Small room, like standing up room. We were all just hanging out. That was when $1 billion was a lot of money. So I saw a lot of things. And one of the conversations I had was with the absolute top internet publicity guy. And this was, well, I don't know. It was the 90s. And he was the guy you went to if you needed PR for your startup. So Yahoo went to him, AOL went to him, Steve Jobs went to him. Get the picture? And his name was Ed Niehaus. Ed Niehaus, and he was a neighbor, and we were friendly enough that I often went out to dinner with him and his family. And I was having dinner with him in a Japanese restaurant on Fillmore Street when he got a pager. Yes, it was pager time. There were no smartphones, and he got a message that said, "Call me, Steve," and that was Steve Jobs. But anyway, he said, "Hey, Ken, my business is simple. I help startups get to critical mass so that they can be acquired or destroyed by Microsoft." Okay. This may seem extreme. If you live through it, I'm being accurate. If not, you can read some history. He had a lock on the whole thing. So the plan was to put a button on the startup screen of, Windows 95, And that button would take you to the Microsoft network. And all the other BBSs, including CompuServe, which had a national network. So you could, that was the beauty of CompuServe. If you lived in Oshkosh, or you lived in Tampa, or you lived in Boise, Idaho, wherever you lived, you could make a local call and get on CompuServe. But CompuServe would have been out of luck because 90 per, and very few people were online then. I believe it was 2 to 3 million. Nobody has the exact number, but like one less than 1% of the country was online in 1993. Less than 1%. So the huge growth curve had yet to manifest. So the world would have been you start up your, and by the way, people don't remember this. Bill Gates, Steve Jobs had to rejoin Apple after being gone for many years. And he rejoined because the board became so desperate. And they were so desperate because Apple was circling the drain. They were about to go out of business. There was a very likely scenario by which Apple would have gone out of business in the early 90s. Okay. So that would have left us with nothing but the Microsoft operating system, which meant your PC, which was connected to no nothing else, would have been entirely controlled by Bill Gates. And so when you logged on, you would get a button for not AOL, not CompuServe. You would have gotten a button for the Microsoft network. So that 98% of the population that had never been online before, the only thing they would have known about online was the Microsoft network. And what would have happened to CompuServe and AOL? Well, in time, they would have, like so many other companies, disappeared because Gates could have played games and he could have paid people to go online. I mean, he could have made going online absolutely free. You don't have to pay a monthly. That was always their game plan. And their game plan is very simple. Let's say you came out with something competing with them. They would come out with something that they would cobble together some piece of crap and sell it for 10 cents on the dollar and then use their superior marketing force and their ownership of the operating system to basically force feed the market their crap. There was a great joke that used to circulate when Microsoft was at the height of its powers. How many Microsoft software engineers does it take to put in a light bulb? Zero. They declare darkness the standard. Okay. So now, luckily for us, and this is where one could believe in Providence. Bill Gates was ignoring, or not ignoring, but he was slowboating the Microsoft network. It was something they were going to get to. They're a big corporation. They take their time doing things. But his personal obsession was twofold. Number one, the CD-ROM. He thought that was the greatest thing ever seen on Earth. You've probably never seen any pictures of him goofing around. Whether if you look around, there's a picture of him being hoisted by a crane at the top of two trees, holding a CD-ROM, and beneath him are two stacks of paper, the height of those two trees. And he wanted to demonstrate the power of the CD-ROM. This is where he was at mentally. And the other thing he was, of course, focused on was Windows 95, because their Windows product, their point-and-click interface, was absolute crap, and they had to do something about it. Now, it wasn't going to be Windows 95; it was going to be Windows 93. But of course, they screwed up, and they had to keep putting things forward and forward and forward. Now, here's a very plausible scenario, folks. They got their act together, and they launched their new and improved Windows product in 93 instead of 95. Okay. And another plausible possibility, I'm not, not it's not plausible, it's certain. Okay. Another potential is that instead of slow boating it, they got their Windows, Microsoft network up and running and humming and happening in 93. Okay. So I'm telling you from someone who was there, and you can read the book and understand, the web was a very fragile, tenuous initiative in 1993. Very, very fragile. And there had been other web-like things. There was a thing called Gopher. There was a thing called Waze, WAIS. There was a thing called Anonymous FTP. There were all kinds of schemes out there to make the internet more usable, and none of them were getting traction. And there is absolutely nothing that says the web would have gotten traction had the events of 1993 through 1995 not happened. And had Gates gotten his operating system out and up and running and sold to the masses, and had they gotten Microsoft Network sold to the masses, they would have put the Microsoft Network button on your startup screen, which was everybody's startup screen, and people would have experienced the online world through Bill Gates and Microsoft, and you'd probably still be paying by the hour. And there's another wrinkle to this. Do you like being able to put up a website without asking somebody's permission and being on the network? Good luck trying that on the Microsoft network or AOL or CompuServe or any of the other proprietary networks. You would not have been able to do that. Do you like selling things on the internet? Do you like making a living on the internet or using the internet to facilitate your living? You would not have been able to do that. Can you imagine going to Bill Gates and Microsoft and saying, "Hey, I want to put a store on the Microsoft network"? Now, that would have worked. You know, they would have said, "Bring a check, make sure it's got many, many zeros after it." And probably within a year, we'll have some kind of integration, which you'll pay for. And we'll take a share of everything you sell. You see where this is going? That's the world we could have absolutely have had and be in to this day. So it's all chronicled in How the Web Won, every little wrinkle of the story, every little thing that had to go right. And I didn't count them. Maybe I'll do that. But it was dozens of things that could have gone either way, just by the grace of God, happened to go our way. And then they all came together, and we've got the World Wide Web. And if you think it was natural and that it was preordained and that it was inevitable, think again. And it's an important lesson about everything in life. You know, this is why when you're working on something, you really got to like run on all eight cylinders. You can't be half-assing it, because it takes that energy, that just relentless drive. You know, no, leave no stone unturned to get to the destination. And there were a lot of people doing that in the period of 1993 to 1995, and we didn't even know exactly what we were doing. Everybody had a particular piece of the puzzle. One group made a stable web browser and server, which they decided to build a business around and act like a business. If they hadn't made that decision, I'm not sure we'd have the web. And how about clicking on things? I mean, the technology for clicking existed, but the idea of using click-through rate as a way of assessing your success or lack of it, that didn't exist until 1994. The idea of selling things that you could click on to other people, That didn't exist until 1994. When you read the book, you're going to be surprised who came up with that idea and how that idea came into being. So I hope you get the book. I especially hope you'll review it. And there's a lot of really good business lessons independent of the history. And the history is unparalleled. There's never been a history like this on the web. And I think anybody going forward that wants to do scholarship on this, and I hope there will be scholars that study this, they'll have to use this book as a sort of a foundation for knowing where to look and who to talk to and what mattered and what didn't matter. But we all have something very, very to be very, very thankful for. Because again, if you use the web ever, if you use the internet, if you buy, if you sell, if you get information, it's because of a relatively small handful of people that were busting their hump, working really hard for an uncertain reward. And that's why we've got what we've got. So happy Thanksgiving to everybody. This has been Ask Ken, a feature of the System Club for System Club members only.